As many of you know, for several years I did serve as the chaplain to the Remembrance Day ceremonies here in Aldergrove. It was a wonderful opportunity to offer a spiritual message of peace to several hundred members of this community who would never think of darkening the doors of a church. Of course, the message did have to be brief, because once the noisy veteran planes flew over, I was completely hooped. But today, I have all the time in the world. Don't panic, Charlie, don't panic. But seriously, I do believe that this year is different, because for the first time in my memory, I feel that we need not only to look back in remembrance, although that does remain of central importance, but also to look forward, to try to make sure that we don't repeat past mistakes. Surely the best way to honor our veterans is to ensure that we don't have to go to war again. And I'm proposing then, in the face of the things that are going on around us right now, we need to adopt a stance of peacemaking. It's an active rather than a passive stance. Because it feels, doesn't it, as though the forces of hate and discord are winning the propaganda war right now. I believe it is time for people of goodwill to speak up just as loudly. We need to step up now before it's too late, by pushing back against the negative propaganda of brokenness and anger and replacing it with a different propaganda, which Christians would call the good news of the gospel, but which all people of goodwill would recognize in the universal mantra to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. Because quite simply, if folks choose to adopt that mantra, the bad guys have absolutely nothing. At this moment in time, I do believe that North America is started on a path which, if unchecked, will lead us inexorably to war, either civil or international or both. You see, for those of us who started life in Europe, what's going on here is eerily familiar. Because we lived in the very real aftermath of the Second World War, the result of the coming to power of the Nazis, the German manifestation of fascism. Even though I personally didn't live through that war, my sister did. My dad and mom had to flee their home. Our family was profoundly affected, just like everyone else who lived in Europe in those days. Just like back then, we are seeing the growth of fascism. Ordinary people's frustrations and disappointments are being manipulated by unscrupulous leaders whose goal is to gain power and riches. As the writer Albert Camus wrote, be careful. When democracy is sick, fascism comes to its bedside, but it is not to inquire about its health. And so people of other races and religions are being scapegoated, democratic institutions are being dismantled, and stormtroopers are dragging people from their homes and throwing them into prison without trial. It is exactly the same as Adolf Hitler's Nazi playbook. Exactly. But then I hear you say, well, that's just happening in the United States. That's not a real concern for us in Canada. I disagree. Right here in British Columbia, in our last election, people voted for a party that we now know includes, for example, Holocaust deniers. It's just that the Holocaust that they deny is the genocide of indigenous peoples. These people came within just a few seats of becoming our government. And next door in Alberta, their government has broken the Canadian Charter of Rights to pursue good old-fashioned strike-breaking. And the fascists are threatening Canadian sovereignty. And we assume it couldn't possibly happen here, just as the people of Czechoslovakia and Poland, and even in Britain, assumed it couldn't happen to them. History shows that once megalomaniacs start rolling, they don't even know how to stop. And even now, we keep saying they wouldn't, and then they do. And right now, I'm guessing some of you are thinking, he's preaching about politics. You can't do that in church. What about the separation of church and state? But that concept is about ensuring that church and state are not enmeshed, as they did when our church became the agent of the state's residential schools policy. It doesn't mean that churches and other people of goodwill don't have a responsibility to push back against injustice. On the contrary, to quote the late American theologian Walter Brueggemann, the prophetic tasks of the church are to tell the truth in a society that lives in illusion, grieve in a society that practices denial, and express hope in a society that lives in despair. Just like the very first person to confront Donald Trump after his inauguration, the Right Reverend Marianne Budd, who happens to be an Episcopalian bishop. How many of you have heard of the German pastor and theologian Dieter Bonhoeffer? Oh, most of you. That's interesting. In actual fact, he spoke about this. He wrote of his experiences trying to confront Adolf Hitler's Germany. He prayed for a faith that will have learned to overcome the one fateful error of German Protestantism, the complete dichotomy between faith and political life. Actually, there was a movie about Bonhoeffer that came out just last year. Did anybody see it? Yeah? I actually watched it myself in preparation for this sermon. And honestly, I had to stop watching halfway through, because what they were describing happening was exactly what I'm living through now in North America. Bonhoeffer was a theologian. He wrote a book called The Cost of Discipleship, in which he challenged what he called cheap grace. The idea was that although God's grace is freely given to all of us, that doesn't mean that we should sit on our backsides and do nothing to further God's mission. That's cheap. It's kind of like eating out at a restaurant and then skipping out without paying the bill. We are simply called to do the right thing. Bonhoeffer was strongly opposed to the Nazi regime from the very beginning. He watched as the Nazis even took over the Christian church to try to give themselves even more power. In a 1933 radio broadcast, he warned against the possibility of Germany slipping into an idolatrous cult of the Führer, the leader, who could very well turn out to be a Verführer, a misleader. Will it remind you of anybody? And one who mocks God himself. His broadcast was cut off while he was still speaking. By that time, 70% of the German pastors had aligned themselves with the Nazified Reich Church, translated as the Empire or Kingdom Church, or better translated even yet, Christian nationalism. Christians and others of goodwill need to call out our Reich churches that surround us, even here in the Fraser Valley. Bonhoeffer led the remaining 30% of pastors in what was called the Confessing Church, which insisted that they served God in Christ, not the dictator. But he remained enormously frustrated with the failure of people of goodwill to speak out against evil. In one sermon, he said, "The hour is late. The world is choked with weapons, and dreadful is the distrust which looks out of every human being's eyes. The trumpets of war may blow tomorrow. For what are we waiting? Do we want to become involved in this guilt as never before?" He was actually so frustrated that he actually joined the resistance, which had a plan to assassinate Hitler, believing that the only way to save more millions of lives was to put an end to one. And this was his undoing, and he was arrested and executed on April the 9th, 1945, just 1 month before the end of the war. And honestly, I'm not sure that my own theology would allow me to follow that path. But I do believe that the absolute requirement is that people in their words and in their actions speak out against the forces of evil. 6 months after the end of the war, on the behalf of the Lutheran Church, Pastor Martin Niemöller made the following statement. "Through us and the church, infinite wrong was done. We accuse ourselves for not standing to our beliefs more courageously, for not praying more faithfully, for not believing more joyously, and for not loving more completely." Niemöller's name may be familiar to you. He was the one who wrote that famous poem, which I'm going to take the liberty of updating for you. "First they came for the Muslims, and I did not speak out, because I was not a Muslim. Then they came for the progressives, and I did not speak out because I was not a progressive. Then they came for the immigrants, and I did not speak out because I was not an immigrant. Then they came for the poor, and I did not speak out because I was not poor. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me." That German experience was as if you don't speak up before things get out of hand, it's just too late. And of course, that's so much easier said than done, because it might involve taking the risk of posting against the hatred that pervades social media, or even against Uncle Fred when he goes on one of his rants. But let us never forget that it does involve speaking truth with love. The people who follow the fascists are still our neighbors. Presumably, they are deeply dissatisfied with their lives, just as they were in Germany in the 1930s, and for many of the same reasons. It's not going to help, as so many, self-included, do, to dismiss them as stupid or ignorant. What would help is to listen to their anger and to offer a remedy of love, to invite the sheep back to the safety of the fold. The gospel passage that Jeanette read today is often read at traditional remembrance services. "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." And of course, we honor those who have done just that. But may I suggest that by the time we get to laying down one's life, as Bonhoeffer did, that's a bit late. Wouldn't it be better to speak messages of love before we get to killing each other? That is grace. And it's not cheap, because it's way outside our comfort zones. But isn't that precisely what Christ challenged us to do? After all, going even further, in Matthew's gospel, he said, You have heard that it was said, love your neighbors and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And for heaven's sake, let's get on with it before it's too late.